This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Matthew Wade from Star Observer has joined us, and one of the issues we want to talk about is Senator Fraser Anning, the latest knuckle-dragging dog whistler in the Senate, used his first speech to call out safe schools and gender diversity. I wonder whether Fraser Anning has any children or has any grandchildren, and has Fraser Anning asked those grandkids, because he's of the age that the grandchildren would probably be at school, what they think about safe schools and gender diversity? Or did he, you know, just get his ideas from, you know, Bob Catter in one of his saner moments, which are relatively rare and few between? What do you think, Matt?
Well, it's interesting. I think you actually hit it on the head, Macca, is that, you know, over the last 2 to 3 years when the safe schools debate was occurring, or how it's unfolded, so many times when we were speaking with young people in particular, that was the main thing that they were pointing out, was that, you know, throughout all this debate, the people that aren't being asked about the importance of safe schools are the people that it directly affects. Exactly, yeah. So all the majority adult, you know, people that are saying, you know, we need it, it's, you know, all this bad stuff like that, it doesn't actually impact them whatsoever. Like, it's actually the kids that, you know, we should.
And that's exactly the point that Mia Sherman, who's from the Victorian Students Representative Council, just said. And in fact, you know, she did say that they've had numerous conversations with the Minister for Education himself. But the opposition, who are the ones who are critiquing the schools, the Safe Schools program, have not bothered to engage
them
at all.
Well, they need to start selling Lamingtons, then he'll come along. I think, you know, Fraser Anning's speech is disturbing in so many ways. And we actually had a listener earlier who asked us, actually a question, sorry, I'll just cover it. Why did Senator Dean Smith shake Fraser Anning's hand? That was Fraser Anning's first official time in the Senate, and it is the custom to welcome. Now, not all senators did, but Dean Smith is a very courteous man.
No, and in fact, not a single Green or a single Labor actually shook his hand.
But Dean, you know, followed the protocol and the custom.
And what would you have done if you were in Parliament, Macca?
I would have shaked his hand and pulled him a bit closer and told him he was a turd.
I wouldn't have shaken his hand.
No, I would have. It's always good someone like to give their hand a good firm grip.
I wouldn't have shaken his hand.
No, well, there's a bathroom in Parliament House.
Anyway, we're not here to express our views.
No, that's right. We're not here to talk about him. So, you know, reporting this sort of stuff, Matt, you know, one of the challenges is had he reported in such a way that is, you know, I mean, I know, you deal with the facts, but it's got to be pretty hard to write this stuff sometime when you can see the impact that it's having on people.
It's interesting because to a large extent, I'm often desensitized to a lot of the vitriol that people spew out when it comes to homophobia or transphobia. But then every now and again, when something like this comes along, you still just think to yourself, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe, A, that people are saying things like this, but B, that they're actually in positions of power or authority to say that, and they're given a platform in Parliament to do so. It's really toxic and damaging, and I actually think I put this on social media at the time, but, you know, to have someone have a podium, a platform to spout forward those kind of views, it just kind of enables people in broader society to openly state those kind of views. And it
makes it all right, doesn't it?
Exactly, 100%.
Well, certainly the 19 people who voted voted below the line for Fraser Anning, 19.
Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to talk about, you know, that there's some LGBTI students are planning. Now,
before you move on, can we just talk a bit more about this?
Of course.
So what about Bob Catter? I mean, Bob Catter came out and essentially said, you know, good on you, Fraser Anning. What do you think this means for him?
It's very disappointing, but also perhaps unsurprising. I think many of the listeners probably can recall as recently as late last year, you know, Bob Catter was saying some pretty horrendous things about the LGBTI community. Yeah. And I know this speech wasn't just about that. Obviously, the racism was terrible.
Has he started walking backwards yet? Where is he going to walk backwards to if they discovered a gay man in his electorate?
That's right. He did say that.
He did, yeah.
Doesn't have any.
It's shocking. Like, I know that a lot of people obviously naturally and of course, understandably, pointed out how horribly racist the speech was, but I thought it was important for us, I guess, as LGBTI press to also point out that, you know, there was also some terrible stuff said about gender diverse and trans people, just to make sure that people are aware that he's not only racist, but he's also this, this, and this as well. So
he's homophobic and transphobic as well. and probably sexist and probably a whole range of other things, ageist as well, I'd say.
But again, like you and I or yourselves and myself, like, you know, it's quite clear that a lot of the people that hold these kind of views, Fraser included, probably has never even interacted with a trans person in their life. Like, they've probably never sat down with someone and just had a one-on-one conversation. And it ties into what you were saying earlier in relation to Safe Schools. It's that, like, a lot of the times people just are so willing to put forward all these terrible views and whatever, but they're not actually, they've never actually engaged with the community themselves. So how do they have that authority to do so?
I don't know whether you saw it, Matt, and I mentioned it earlier. The local imam in Bob Catter's electorate, in fact, the town where Bob lives, actually came out and did a camera interview how displeased he was or how unhappy he was with Bob, who he says he knows and regards as a friend. And this guy, his family's been in Australia more than 90 years. Wonderful Ocker accent, you know, that wonderful far north Queensland accent. And basically saying, Bob, this is not good enough. You know, come and talk to me about this. You know, we've supported you. I regard you as a friend. Why are you saying this? You know, it's pretty powerful. One of the things that's happened to Bob Catter is a couple of unions who've previously funded some of Bob's campaigns have withdrawn support.
Wow.
And I think one of them, CFMEU, I'm not sure if they've actually withdrawn it yet, but they're saying, hang on, this is a step too far. We can harp, you know, we can concentrate on his use of the term the final solution. And he said, you know, oh, yes, I know what that means, but that's not really, you know.
He didn't really apologise, though, did he? He was kind of just saying, like,
no, he said next time he might consider whether he uses it again.
Right.
but, you know, the challenge is, you know, whether we like it or not, and we don't like it, but he's in the Senate, he has a platform, he has a vote, you know, and along with people, you know, on the right in politics that can use that vote or the government can get them to use that vote in exchange for other concessions that the government will make. And this is what disturbs me is them being there is bad enough, but actually having some power, that's even more disturbing.
I think it raises an interesting point because I guess for myself, like, I'm not naive enough to think that, like, only the views that I hold should be the ones that are publicised or put on a platform. Like, I'm not saying that people that have conservative opinions shouldn't be allowed to express them. But I guess where is the line when it becomes obviously a lot more than that? I mean, like, what he's saying is it's hate, like, it's xenophobia, it's homophobia, it's transphobia. And that kind of stuff really does incite that, like, in the public, it enables people to spread forth this really dangerous kind of views. So who gets to dictate what that line is, like, when it goes too far? And, you know, it still baffles me that somebody that has those kind of opinions is able to kind of express them in a public platform and in a position of authority as well.
Well, our law is very clear about this. Our law says that it is okay to express your view about anything provided that it doesn't offend other people.
And
that's it.
Yeah.
And what he said is clearly offensive. I mean, there is no room for racism or homophobia or transphobia or any other form of discrimination in our public discourse, full stop. That's it.
And, of course, it's been reported, you know, that there was a discussion sometime before he went to the Senate about making a mark with his speech. Now, there's an old PR saying, dogs don't bark at parked cars.
Right, as in, like, the impetus behind saying something so inflammatory was to get as much press as possible.
To get coverage, and, you know, he got coverage.
That's right.
He certainly did. And interestingly enough, 317, one of our gorgeous listeners, says that he became very defensive when questioned about his Lebanese heritage.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't know that.
But, you
know,
I didn't either, actually.
And some of this is that when Bob Katter, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, when he was asked about the comments by the imam in his electorate, and he said, "Oh yeah, but he's a good Aussie. You know, his family's been here 90 years. He's a good Aussie."
What makes a good Aussie?
No, he's allowed to criticise me because he's a good Aussie. You know, in Bob's opinion. So, you know, if you're not a good Aussie and you haven't been here 90 years and all those other things, they're the ones that Bob wants to stop.
Yeah.
And Fraser wants to.
And is the parameter basically how long you've been in the country for? Is that kind of what he was alluding to?
Or is it because I like them?
Like them. And,
which is what it probably is in this case. Matt, I know.
And they're powerful in my electorate. They've got some
before votes. We take a short break, I just want to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
As a journalist, I mean, you obviously meet other journalists. What's been the general reaction amongst, you know, your network and of other people who are thinking and critiquing and writing up all this sort of stuff?
I would say almost universally, outrage, just because, you know, as much as our role, and it's the same with you guys here at Joy, like, is to report the facts, kind of let people know what's going on, it's really hard sometimes, as you mentioned at the start of this conversation, when someone's saying something that not even necessarily directly affects me, but that is something that is quite dangerous and damaging to vulnerable and marginalized communities, it's really hard to report on that completely objectively, because I guess it does emotionally affect you in a way as well. So, but I would say almost universally, the people that I've interacted with have been, quite incensed by it, understandably.
Look, one of the other issues, there's a group of LGBTI students want to counter-protest the March for Men in Melbourne. Now, it's not people marching to look for men.
No.
it's a march of men who, I don't know, I think they might wonder who they are.
Yeah, what's their objective?
Yeah, it's essentially a group of men's rights activists who believe that, I guess, men and masculinity more generally at the moment are under threat because of the rise of feminism and also the push for women's rights. There are some really quite dangerous views and people that are within that movement. I think some people might recall that as recently as, I think, within the last month, there was the Canadian, is it Lauren Southern?
Oh, yes.
So she's very much a part of that boat. So she very much thinks that, you know, people unfairly attack men too much, and she's very much about, you know, seeing women's role as being something that's in like 1950, and, you know, anti pro gun, pro Trump, anti LGBTI, all that kind of stuff. So this march that's happening in Melbourne, March for Men, is very much organised by that cohort. And in particular, the person that has spearheaded it, let me just get her name right, it's Sydney Watson, and she's essentially, I guess, Victoria or Australia's equivalent to Lauren Southern. So she's got tens of thousands of followers online, which is quite scary. But when Eurydice Dixon was raped and murdered months ago,
not a peep.
Well, no, she spoke out, but interestingly, criticizing the people that were calling for more awareness around domestic violence, men's violence against women. She made a video which was very infuriating. That was essentially saying, men aren't the issue, you know, and it was along the lines of, like, it should be women that redirect how they behave, like, you know, to, you know, the onus is on the women as opposed to the men.
You can't really understand how, you know, how could a woman have that view when you look at the figures around violence against women, which is, you know, overwhelmingly by men. I mean, how could you have that view?
But Macca, she's also saying women should take responsibility for being abused. That's what she's saying.
Mm.
What she's saying is that women are at fault because of the way they dress or behave or what they do or where they go. I mean, that's what she's really saying.
Yeah, it really makes me incredibly angry when I read this kind of stuff, because it's just, you're right. Like, I mean, we've actually come quite a long way when it comes to gender equality. I mean, we've got a long way to still go. But when there are people, I mean, whether they're men or women, still talking out and saying that, you know, but it's men that are the most affected. We need to look out for men, and, you know, that we need to make sure that we're holding up these ideals of masculinity,
So let me get this right.
Sorry, was she going to be on Andrew Fault's show?
Actually, she may have been already. I'm not sure, but
it's called Andrew Fault.
Yeah, and no, I like that.
Sorry, Tess.
I was just trying to just be very clear about what she may stand for. So does she stand for a sort of a 1950s sort of model of the way women should be?
It's very, it's very much.
Men should be the sort of dominator, provider, you know, macho, do what they want, swing their dicks, carry on.
Well, she can go to the March for Men.
Well, that's it. And
she's organised it.
Yeah, I know. Can she march? Because she's a woman.
She'll be one of the speakers for sure.
Is she allowed to march with men?
It's open for anyone that's a men's rights activist.
She asked the men whether she's allowed to march with them?
That's a good point. I'm not sure.
Are you allowed to march with them? I mean, you know, you're.
I wouldn't march with a group like that.
No, I know, but you know, I'm being sarcastic.
Anyway, so
I guess that LGBTI students are planning a counter protest, but I guess why it's relevant to them as well is because, I mean, the idea that, you know, men have to act a certain way obviously can affect gay men more broadly, but Sydney herself and also the other co-organizer whose name is Avi Yemeni, who people might recognize, who's at a lot of the anti-safe schools rallies over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He is the co-organizer, and they've both been quite vocally anti-trans in particular, but LGBTI more broadly, in terms of marriage equality. But I mean, I was actually just looking yesterday on social media on Sydney's page, and you know, as recently as 2 days ago, she was making jokes about there being, you know, 60 something different genders and how ridiculous it was and things like this. So, and she, again, like I said, she's got a sizable following.
Yeah, but don't forget, you know, those followers, it's like flies on turds.
Yeah, it's an echo chamber. People obviously just want to hear, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you're right.
And I mean, my question to them is, who cares? Why do you care? Why do you care?
The problem is, we have to care because when this gets traction, this encourages people. Mm. It encourages people that for whatever reason don't understand that, you know, that what they're thinking is so destructive to society. It's not actually about them. It's not actually about them.
I understand why we should care, but why do they care? What drives them? What motivates them?
Well, they've got unresolved issues.
Yeah.
A whole lot of unresolved issues. And
they should pull out a mental health plan and go and see a psychologist?
Well, you know,
get some therapy.
I think so. And I mean, I genuinely feel for people that have these views because, you know, there's a horse loose in the top paddock. You know.
Well, interestingly, this isn't, I know this necessarily has to be an important factor, but, you know, Sydney is like, I think she's like 20, early 20s, like she's quite young, and she actually, interestingly, did the same course that I did at the same university that I did in Melbourne.
So it's you that's cool.
I know, it wasn't at the same time as me, I think it was after me.
Bad maths.
But I just find it so, you know, often when an older politician, a right-wing conservative politician says something quite inflammatory or anti-LGBTI, it's, I guess, easier to dismiss it as, you know, oh, well, that's just, you know, how they've grown up, you know, they're not going to change their opinion. But this is like the new generation of people, and that, you know, someone that has, like I said, a large following and that is actually organising a massive march in Melbourne to basically say, you know, women's place is, you know, very much subordinate to men and men should be masculine and dominant.
She can't be there. She's not allowed to be there.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's interesting.
She should be home in the kitchen.
It's bizarre, really.
With the pink Laminex table paddling around in it.
Let's move on. Let's leave the men, the March for Men in Melbourne.
When is it?
It's next Saturday. So in a week's time, and it'll be at Federation Square. Actually, I think at midday, so it'll be right after your show wraps up.
Well, I think maybe we should go, Macca, and support the young LGBTI protesters.
Well, March, there'll probably be 12 of them there.
I'm curious to see how many people the actual March for Men draws out, because I know there have been things like that in the US previously where the counter-protest far outweighed the actual original.
So moving right along, we had another story during the week about a church calling homosexuality a godless lifestyle.
Yeah, so basically, and I'll try to unpack this correctly, so I'm just going to make sure I get it right. So a New South Wales church that was actually approved to deliver scripture lessons in schools. So basically, as far as I believe, all New South Wales government schools are required to set aside, I think, up to 1 hour for special religious education. And this church in particular was approved to deliver some of those scripture lessons. Some of its material on the website, like resources for teaching and things like that, had a lot of anti-gay things in it. So as you mentioned already, basically calling homosexuality a godless lifestyle, claiming that homosexuality was a sin and that sinners deserved death. And so the Department of Education have been alerted to this, and so they've forced the church to take down that material. But I guess it raises a more broader, interesting point, which is that, you know, these people are kind of being tasked to teach young people about religion. And if, I guess, what they're aligning themselves with is saying that, A, gay people, or homosexuality is a sin, and B, if you're a sinner, then you should not be alive. It's shocking.
Do we know which church it was, Matt?
Yeah, so it was the Fellowship Baptist Church of Blacktown.
Oh.
That's the full title.
That's a pretty extreme group, isn't it? Baptist churches tend to be a bit more on the...
They like dancing. Well, they don't like dancing, do they?
I don't think they do. I don't think they do. I mean, what's interesting for me about all that is that what message does that send to LGBTI people of faith?
Well, that's it as well. Yeah, I think a lot of the time when I see things in the news, whether we've written or otherwise, that are around LGBTI people and religion, a lot of people that I'm connected with that are strongly practicing Catholics or whatever it may be, or Muslims, you know, they say, you know, their voices are always left out and they're not considered. Like, a lot of people, I guess, have this misconception that if you're LGBTI, you couldn't possibly be religious. But there are a lot of people in the community that...
It is very difficult for them. I mean, I think of my cleaner who's, you know, a man in... a gay man, you know, in his... approaching his 60s. He describes himself as being a man of faith. He was actively engaged with churches. He no longer is because of some of those attitudes.
Wow, yeah.
So he still has faith. He expresses and conducts his faith in his own personal way. I mean, it must be very, very difficult for those people.
I think so too, because you kind of actually almost face stigma or kind of that fear of judgment from within the community as well. So, I mean, obviously...
Within the community and within the faith community.
Well, exactly.
On top of that.
Yeah, it's a double glazed kind of, you know, glass ceiling in a way, because you're kind of, you know, yeah, like you said, from the faith community, a lot of people may not accept who you are as a person, but a lot of LGBTI people that are anti-religion also, you know, maybe ostracize you because they just think, how could you possibly be LGBT? How can you reconcile your sexual or gender identity with your religion or faith?
So just to complete that story, the education department asked them to remove this material off their website. Were they breaking any rules? Were they, you know, have they been in any way penalised for what they've done?
As far as I'm aware at this stage, because it's quite a relatively recent story, they're still going to be delivering the scripture lessons, but I guess the department has just said you have to take that specific material off your website because it's age inappropriate. Actually, that's important too. I mean, it's inappropriate just generally, but they've cited it as age inappropriate.
Age inappropriate is the thing that they've used.
Yeah.
Now, there was something interesting during the week as well, Matt. I might have been last week. The state opposition, the National Party and the Liberal Party, have said they will go to the next election with a policy that that basically requires confessions made in the confession around child sexual abuse not to be protected.
Oh, right.
Now, I thought this was interesting because predominantly the announcement was made by Peter Ryan, isn't it, Tass, the leader of the state National Party?
Yes.
Who said that he was, you know, he was a practicing, very strong Catholic, but that the, you know, kids must come first. Now, I find this really interesting when you look at some of their other policies, their position around state schools, and when we were speaking with Mia Sherman from the Victorian Student Representative Council, she made the point around safe schools. The students want it. The teachers want it.
Mm-hmm.
The school communities overwhelmingly want it. The politicians don't come and ask the students what they think.
Mm-hmm.
But the critiques. She did say that she's had plenty of conversations with the department and the Minister for Education.
Yeah, and the Minister.
But not the opposition, who are the ones who've actually argued against it.
And what I find interesting with this is that, and full points to the state opposition for saying this about the confessional.
Mm.
But then again, you know, then on the other side you say, well, we actually know what their position on safe schools is because Tim Smith wasn't able to speak to us. Mm. Apparently his phone didn't work in the Adelaide Hills, which I found really interesting. But, you know, there's a real inconsistency there, isn't there?
100%. I guess you can't say on one hand that you're all about the children and making sure that they're getting what's best for them, or, you know, that it's being brought to light. And on the flip side, like you're saying, you're completely vehemently against safe schools. Like, it's a contradiction.
You know, Peter Ryan's obviously seen the evidence around why the seal of the confessional needs to be removed.
Mm.
He's seen the evidence. He mustn't have read the evidence about why safe schools is needed, Tass.
Mm.
And I think actually unfairly, not to give like a shameless plug to Star Observer, but our most recent issue is a youth
why
issue.
Why not?
And it's just one of those things that reminded me as we were working on it over the last month that, you know, that obviously young people's voices are often left out of conversations around issues that directly affect them. And I think a lot of the times it ties into whether they're conservative or not, I guess adults feeling that maybe younger people don't have the capacity to make decisions for themselves when it comes to these sort of things, which is ludicrous. Like often, I mean, not even in relation to safe schools, but just generally often they're actually more switched on to the things that affect them than perhaps other people are.
Yeah, so. No, the lived experience is just such an important consideration in all public policy making.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Remember, it's your station. It's a community station. Just as Star Observer is a community newspaper. Matthew Wade, back with
That's
us.
That's right.
Matthew, I was saying I'd like to continue the theme of sort of nutty stories. So what happened in WA? The WA University decided to defend a decision to host a conference and feature a paediatrician who believes that people with mental... people who are trans have a mental illness.
There has been an update since then, but I'll get to that. So, yeah, essentially, University of WA were planning to host a talk actually last night with a US paediatrician, as you mentioned, who has said quite awful things about trans people.
And who was that person?
So his name is Quentin Van Meter. And basically, he goes against, you know, denied proven science around trans people just to basically call them delusional people and all this kind of thing. So a protest was created online to, I guess, petition the vice chancellor of the university to stop the talk from happening. And it actually amassed, I believe, nearly 7,000 signatures. So it wasn't just a few annoyed people. Like a lot of people were like, we shouldn't be giving this person a platform at our university. But however, when that happened, the vice chancellor then sent a letter to staff and students saying that, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, but it was essentially saying it was a call for free speech, kind of saying, like, at the end of the day, while his opinions may not align with our universities, we still can't censor or silence somebody because their views differ to ours. So a lot of people were obviously upset about that because, again, it's like what we're talking about in the there is a bit of a common theme with some of these things. It's like, who gets to dictate where the line is? Like, sure, people might have different opinions to yourself, but where is the line drawn? Who gets to choose where the line is? I mean, if someone's actually going against proven science around transgender people and saying that they're delusional and mentally ill, I mean, that's not just a difference of opinion. I mean, that's just...
It's actually offensive. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, that is actually offensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there is no scientific evidence to back that. Dr. Quentin might have pulled something out of his ass, but, I mean, that is actually not scientific evidence.
Did he get to Australia?
I'm not sure if he arrived, but the reason why they ended up... Sorry, I should say, they didn't end up having the talk last night, but it wasn't because of the petition. Well, I guess it kind of was...
Of course it was.
By extension, but they're saying it was because of safety concerns.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
You know, Quentin was probably frightened about coming here because he would have fallen off the side of the earth.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, on that journey.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it shows, I guess, the power and, you know, enough people can get behind, you know, telling someone, you know, it can actually make a difference. And I guess, he obviously didn't end up doing the talk. I'm not sure if he's here, though. I mean, he potentially is here right now. I'm not sure.
Hello, Quentin. Are you there?
Yeah. Mac, the last people he'd be listening to.
Are you hanging on to the side of the earth, Quentin?
Now, Quentin, have you got any good news for us? I mean, you've been
he's
full
not
of
Quentin.
Oh my God, no! Yeah,
this cold. Matt, any good news?
He
for
hasn't
us?
Even had good drugs. He's just on strepsils.
I know.
It's the most offensive thing you've ever called me, Taz. I was going to say.
I apologise. I take it
it's
back.
It's okay. In good news, there's a $716,000 grant which has been awarded to, I believe, the Telethon Kids Institute to fund research into the mental health needs of Indigenous LGBTI young people. So it'll be the first of its kind ever in the country, which is really, really great. And just to get it right, I know that it's a 3-year project that'll be conducted in WA, New South Wales and the Northern Territory. And they're basically going to look at the social needs, the mental health needs, the issues, the barriers faced by young Indigenous LGBTI people, which is great. And I guess beyond the researchers at Telethon Kids Institute, they've also partnered with Black Rainbow, which some of the listeners might be familiar with, which is a not-for-profit group that focuses specifically on queer young Indigenous, well, not young, but queer Indigenous people.
We've had them on the show.
Yeah. So I think it's great that they've also partnered with a community group as well to help push forward the research. And hopefully... over the course of the 3 years, whatever the results are, help to inform support services or resources or whatever it may be because given it's something that hasn't really been looked into in this kind of capacity before, I think it's a really great step.
And Matt, who provided this grant?
It was the health minister announced them. So it was part of, let me just make sure I get it right, it was the National Health and Medical Research Council.
Australia. Yes. So it wasn't actually the government, it was actually the council itself.
Greg Hunt announced the funding, but you're right, it was the council,
It was a photo opportunity.
Yeah.
So how many pages is Star Observer?
This month. I believe it is 64. Mm. Yeah, it's a really great issue this month because we've obviously, given it's Wear It Purple Day in a week or two, we thought we'd do a kind of youth-centred issue. So we've got Troye Sivan on the cover, which is cool. But then we've also commissioned a lot of young people to write stories for us in the magazine about like their experiences, their identities. You know, we've got a piece on bisexuality and pansexuality. We've also got a piece that someone reported on around sex education in Sydney's Bible Belt. So in Western Sydney suburbs, being a young LGBTI person can be, I guess, quite difficult because you're not really given much access to inclusive healthcare or sex education. Yeah. There's a list, I believe, of inclusive GPs in Sydney that are trained in specifically dealing with like HIV and gay healthcare, and in Western Sydney I think there's only one or two that actually have all the training, so that's quite an interesting one as well. But yeah, so we just kind of wanted to cover a gamut of issues that directly affect young LGBTI people, but also give young LGBTI people the opportunity to actually write for us and their stories and their voices, I guess, similar, you know, for us, by us.
It's a great thing coming up later in the year. Are there anything you guys are working on, you know, as a big story you want to share with us? Or perhaps whisper it.
Yeah.
Signal.
Well, I will say, I guess, for the upcoming issue, without, I guess, telling exactly what we're writing about, I guess we wanted to really focus on gender. I guess, I mean, this isn't new necessarily, but in light of recent people such as Fraser Anning, you know, still out there and spouting really horrible transphobic things, on the flip side, there are quite a lot of amazing trans and gender diverse people that are really leading the way in terms of, I guess, what I would call like a gender revolution. Like, you know, the way that we saw gender even 10 years ago is different to how we see it now. And I think it's a testament to the hard work of a lot of people in Melbourne and in Australia. So we're hoping we can kind of help to profile that and show, even though there are still these issues present, there are a lot of people that are doing amazing stuff in the community as well.
And do you have a favourite Aretha Franklin song?
I do, actually. I've got that straight away. I don't have to think about it. Ain't No Way is my favourite Aretha Franklin song because it's sad, it's beautiful, and her voice is amazing. But I will say yesterday I pretty much exclusively listened to Aretha tracks. She's amazing. So, yeah, Ain't No Way is my favourite.
I think everybody in Melbourne did those.
Yeah, that's true. Well, actually, I went to the Melbourne Film Festival yesterday, and ahead of each of the movies they were just playing Aretha music, which was quite nice.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.